the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Welcome back to The Last Word. It's Ian Guider in for Matt today. Now, many of you have for a long time now described the horror unfolding in Gaza as genocide, something which the Israeli government have strenuously pushed back at it. But one person has possibly a unique take on this, who has described it in the New York Times as genocide. He is a leading international scholar of Holocaust and genocide, but also a former soldier in the Israeli army who served in Gaza and the West Bank. He is Professor Omar Bartov from Brown University. And Professor Bartov, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word. Your essay in the New York Times, where you describe the events unfolding before us in Gaza as genocide, is getting a lot of attention. But there will be many people saying, going right back to the initial Israeli response after the October 7th attacks, that there was an unfairness about this from the very beginning, in that civilians were being deliberately targeted.
Yes, hello, and thank you for having me. Look, I mean, it took me a while to reach that conclusion. Initially, as you know, this started with the Hamas attack, and about 800 Israeli civilians were killed. So initially the IDF response itself, the official goals of the war to destroy Hamas and to release the hostages, appeared reasonable. There were many statements, however, made by Israeli politicians and generals at the time that had a genocidal content. And the question was whether those were just made in the heat of the moment or indicated a particular pattern. And I thought that by May of 2024, that pattern had been established, which was a pattern not of accomplishing the official war goals, but rather of making the entire Gaza Strip uninhabitable for its population. And interestingly, that was around the time that the IDF moved into Rafah and removed about a million people who were living there, mostly displaced from other sites of fighting, to the beach area. So that was a million people. And now the plans that the government has again are similar, in that they want to do that with the population of Gaza once more. So this kind of systematic destruction of not only of housing, of about 90% has been destroyed, but also of hospitals, schools, mosques, museums, water plants, anything that stands, to make sure that people would not be able to return to their homes, and also would not be able to reconstitute their national identity in any way, with the apparent goal of removing the population entirely from Gaza if there's anybody who would take them in, indicated to me a genocidal pattern.
Do you believe that currently there are members of the Israeli government, and we can think of some cabinet ministers whose comments in recent years come to mind, want to eliminate the Palestinian people from Gaza or make them forced out of where they are right now into other countries?
Yes, I mean, it's not a matter of my belief. It's that they are saying that openly. They are saying that the IDF has to control all of Gaza, and then that the population has to be encouraged to leave. And it's being encouraged by not getting enough food or clean water, medical help, and now a starvation crisis. And the whole idea is to concentrate them in the south, make life increasingly impossible. It's already horrific there, and somehow hope that some other country would take them in. And this is phase one, because phase two has to do with the West Bank, which also is experiencing a creeping ethnic cleansing. 40,000 people have been displaced, many houses destroyed, and many tactics are being imported from Gaza to the West Bank. It's at a lesser intensity because the IDF is mostly involved in Gaza now.
Why are the Israeli government pushing so clearly this idea that the war cannot end without Hamas disarming, when they know that this is not going to happen? They know that they are not going to eradicate Hamas either as an ideal or a fighting force.
So look, I mean, there are two aspects to this. One is Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's own survival as a politician. And for him, the most important thing is to keep the war going. When he says absolute victory, we will fight until we reach absolute victory, it means we will keep fighting because there is no absolute victory. And as long as the fighting is going on, then he doesn't have to worry about the far-right people in his cabinet leaving the cabinet and the government collapsing. And then he might not be reelected, but there would be a state commission of inquiry to look into the fiasco of October 7th, of which he is the main responsible person, and his own corruption trials, and also, of course, the arrest warrants against him by the ICC. But more generally, I think that's only a matter of survival. More generally, for Netanyahu, and it's not only the far-right elements in his cabinet, but he himself, for many years, he maintained the myth that Israel could manage the occupation and persuaded both the Israeli public and much of the, you know, Europe and the United States that this is manageable. And he did that by actually supporting Hamas, by allowing millions of dollars, Qatari dollars, to get into the Gaza Strip. Because as long as Hamas was in power, he could say that, well, and we have no one to talk with. These people are very extreme, so we can't have any territorial compromise with them. That blew up on October 7th. And because of that, he can never say what his ultimate goal is. What is the day after? He has never said anything, because the day after would have to be, if Hamas is removed, who would take over Gaza? It would be the Palestinian Authority. And for him, that's exactly the nightmare that he has tried to avoid all this time. So he's biding his time and hoping that somehow he would be able to empty at least part of Gaza. And then, of course, Jewish settlers are waiting just across the border to move in and start taking it over.
Knowing, as you do, what a soldier is like, you served, I think it was in the 1970s, you served in the IDF and you were in both the West Bank and Gaza. Why are so many Israeli soldiers, conscripts, young men, but also conscious of the history of their country and what happened in the 1940s, why are they continuing to do this? Why are they still following orders when they can clearly see what is happening in front of them?
Yeah, you know, that's a complicated question. I mean, first of all, the army that I served in was very different from the army today. The manpower composition of the army now, many of the combat units have a high proportion of soldiers who were recruited, young men recruited from the settlements, and they are of a very different cast of mind. Many of them are national religious and quite fanaticized by their own leaders. And there are quite a number of brigade commanders, senior officers, who also come from that background. And for them, this is a holy war. This is not just a sort of, you know, a matter of security, but a matter of part of redemption. So that's part of it. The other part, I would say, is that in Israel, Israel is living in a bubble. Everything that is being reported around the world is not being reported in Israel. When anything is reported about hunger in Gaza or killings of civilians every day, people queuing up for food, if it ever filters into Israeli news, it comes only as enemy propaganda or something that won't be good for our cause rather than any empathy. And I think that the combination of not quite understanding what the nature of the war is, and at the same time, many people have been fanaticized by their own leaders, including a bunch of fanatical rabbis in the West Bank, that produces this kind of army. At the same time, it's true that morale seems to have declined in the army. Reservists have served for hundreds of days by now, and they are exhausted because they're losing their jobs, their families are falling apart, and the regular soldiers, the conscripts, have been there also for months on end. So there is a sense of attrition, and that's one reason that the chief of staff is actually opposed to the government's plan and is stalling because he has to follow orders, but he's actually stalling on implementing what Netanyahu has just ordered to take over the entire Gaza Strip.
Given what we are seeing unfolding on our screens, the starvation, the horror, attacking journalists, targeting civilians, children being killed, has Israel lost the right to talk about the Holocaust?
Well, you know, this is what I was writing about in that op-ed in the New York Times, that I think one aspect of this is that over many decades, Israel claimed and persuaded others that attacks on it, even if there were attacks by people it was actually occupying and oppressing, presented a existential danger. And in Israel, an existential danger is immediately interpreted as another Auschwitz lurking behind the corner. And so once that is seen as such, then everything, no holds are barred, anything is possible, and Israel does not have to abide by any international agreements or international law. Because Israel has conducted this war so brutally and has killed so many people and has done it with such impunity to this moment, impunity from the international community, I think that it has run out of that credit. It will no longer be able to say we are the people that experienced genocide and therefore we can respond as forcefully as we need to, because this war is not really a war of defense. It's not a war against an existential danger. It's a war of ethnic cleansing and genocide.
And just finally, how do you see this ending?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody knows. The only thing that will stop Israel from continuing in this direction will be massive efforts from the outside, particularly from the United States, and it's hard for us to know what President Trump is going to do. If Israel is allowed to continue, I think it's on the way to becoming a full-blown apartheid state, an authoritarian state. The rule of law in Israel itself is deteriorating. The judiciary is weakening. The police is now under the control of a very extremist minister, Ben-Gvir. So there will be not only violence and repression of Palestinians, including Palestinian citizens of Israel, but also of anyone who opposes the government within the Jewish population. That will make it into a pariah state. And as such, I don't think it will have a long lease on life, but it could exist for a while before it implodes. The other option would be, of course, to change the political paradigm. There are no forces in Israel right now that could bring that about. So it has to begin with massive pressure from European allies, from Germany, the UK, Ireland, France, and of course, most importantly, from the United States. And that maybe will be the light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay, Professor Omar Bartov from Brown University, Professor of Holocaust and Genocidal Studies. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.